Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I am your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with Adam Stoker.
Hello, Stuart. How are you doing?
I'm good, Adam. I didn't give you an adjective today.
No, I was trying to prepare for what the, insult or criticism was going to be, and the fact that you just introduced me normally threw me off more than it would have otherwise.
Well, that was the curveball. Like, sometimes playing it straight is taking a risk. And so that's what we did. But coming off of a phenomenal standing ovation performance that you got, well, you got an ovation. I don't know if it was standing, but Esto, you got a round of applause. And so I figured I'm going to be nice to you today for once.
Well, you know what? I think what happened is on stage, you realized that the scales have tipped a little bit from where you perceived that they were, and that people actually do enjoy both of our takes instead of just yours. And I really appreciated that.
Well, because of this is an episode where I'm not going to make fun of you. I'm going to just let that sail on by. I'm not going to respond.
Oh, the creative license I have now, if you're going to take that line for the whole episode.
Well, we'll see. I might get tired of it after Stu's news, but we'll see. But we have a guest with us today. Do you want to make the intro? You brought Kristen to the table, so if you want to make the intro.
Yeah, and really excited for our conversation today. I was introduced to a couple of people from the Go Providence organization, and through that introduction, I was able to connect with Kristen. And Kristen Adamo, and am I pronouncing that correctly, Kristen?
Yes, good
okay,
job.
Wanted to make sure I didn't mess it up. But you are the CEO of Go Providence, and you've got a couple of thoughts that I thought would be really, really valuable to have on the show today. So thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
We're so glad. I've not met you yet, Kristen, so I'm really excited to hear what you have to say. I know that our audience is going to love this topic because it's one that people are having behind closed doors a lot, but not a whole lot in the limelight. And so that's why this show exists. But Kristen, hold on to your hat, because before we get into the topic, it's that time you've been waiting for, the world has been waiting for, and Adam would argue that the audience of Esto was waiting for. It's time for Stu's News.
You know, I got to say, it went over really well at Esto. And the t-shirts were a big hit. I am going to be honest with you, Stuart. More people wanted the I'm Bringing Destiny Back shirt than the Stu's News jingle shirt.
Of course.
At the event.
Of course.
I'm willing to admit it.
All right. So for those of you who weren't at Esto, we had shirts. I had one that said I'm Bringing Destiny Back. I was doing my greatest Justin Timberlake impression. And then you had one that said Stu's News jingle is a banger. And we were giving them out, right? And people had a choice, yep. And they overwhelmingly wanted the one that said,
well,
I'm bringing
Destiny
back.
Yeah, about 65-35.
That's overwhelming. So like a 2-1. I'd say that's overwhelming. And as a marketer who uses the most aggressive version of the truth, then that's certainly overwhelming. But today's Stu's News, we're going to actually follow up on Esto. So you and I got to do a lively session there where we talked about some of the topics we talked about on this show. And I felt like we got good reception. A lot of people seemed to like the conflict, the discourse that happens in that kind of format. And I was told, I don't know if you were, that they want to see more of that kind of thing. So any other shows want us to come on and act like fools on stage, we're happy to do it. But I wanted to ask you, Adam, a question, and I'll share my thoughts. Were there any big takeaways from Esto for you?
I think for me, the thing that was most exciting was how engaged the audience was. And there was a couple things with that. Number one is when we asked how many people had heard the show, I was pretty thrilled with how many hands actually went up and people had actually been listening to the show. So that was really cool. But on top of that,
your biggest takeaway from Esto was your ego. Is that what you're saying right now?
Our collective ego. Okay. Our collective ego. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
No, but what was really cool, and thank you for that, mm-hmm. Was when we used a technology called Mentimeter where we were able to pull the audience live, and we got some great participation from the audience. I mean, I think I can't remember how many people were in the room, but we had like 150 people using the voting tool that we had live in the session. And I think that allowed us to really get the pulse of the room. And my takeaway was, I'm going to do live polling in every presentation I do from this point forward, because it allows the audience to actually participate in the discussion. And I think our audience participation was one of the biggest things that made our session unique and probably made it entertaining for everyone else, because they got to feel like they were a part of it instead of just the talking head format that you get in a lot of conference sessions.
Yeah, no, our session was great. I'll be honest, when I asked you the question, I meant more about Estoa in general, but it's very on brand for you to focus on our session specifically.
You know what? I want to roll the tape back and see what the question actually
I said,
sounded
what
like.
was your takeaway from Esto? And you went straight for our session. So yes, I agree 100% with everything you said. I felt like we sort of went evolving, and there were some other sessions that really did engage the audience, and so I think that's a shift we're going to see. One of the things I love about Esto in general is, and I don't know, Kristen, if you've been to Esto before, but the ratio of vendors to DMOs feels a little more comfortable because the barrier for the vendors to be participating in it is pretty high, right? And so I just don't get as many unsolicited sales pitches, which I like. I'm there to learn, right? I'm there to engage. I do want to see some of our partners and get some quality time with them, which we certainly did. But I just like the caliber of the folks there and the fact that we're all there to learn. And one of the things that I took away was there's a lot of innovation. There's a lot more innovation going on in our industry today than there was when I joined the industry 4 years ago, right? People are beginning to take risks. I saw some really novel concepts talked about on the stage. Shout out to who was it? It was Shane with Visit Wisconsin that was talking about the neuro tracking to show ads to people and then measure how their emotions are. I thought that was really cool. Certainly something we're going to take away. But I will say there's also a lot of conversation still about our identity. And so I want to bring Kristen into this topic because I think that's one of the things we're going to be talking about. And Adam, you actually had a question that you got an ovation for that was posed about, are we DMOs or DMMOs or, you know, are we placemakers or are we promoters? And so you sort of responded to that in a certain way. We'll save that until later because I'm sure you're going to sort of bring that in. But it seemed to resonate with people that this is something that everyone's talking about. So, Kristen, tell us what you think about product development as it relates to a DMO and specifically the CEO's role in product development.
Yeah, so I think that the pandemic saw a seismic shift in the way in which we do our jobs. And one of the things that came out for me as a, by the way, a new CEO, I was in about 6 months before the pandemic hit, was that necessity to be more a part of the community conversation. And what comes with that is working with like-minded partners to develop product. So when we do it, I think of it more as an umbrella concept. We do the things we do well. We help with marketing. We help with convening. We help with imagining what things will look like. And then we work with like-minded agencies to do the things that we don't do. We aren't in the business of planning events, but we sure are in the business of making sure they're there for our visitors.
And our residents, right? Yeah,
Yes.
I would agree. And I think that's one of the challenges that we face as an industry is there's no two DMOs or destinations the same. And so the stakeholders, the players that are there and the assets you have to work with are very different depending on your destination. Like, because there are destinations where event planning is a part of their mandate, right? And there's some like us that are not, although we used to be. There were some where economic development is part of their mandate. There's some where it's not. There's some where they're a chamber and a CVB. There's some where they're not. So I think the challenge we face is we're all trying to find a silver bullet and say, this is our role. But I think it's so contextual based on our specific situation and who the other stakeholders are that it's impossible to have a single playbook.
100%. And one of the beauties about Rhode Island and Providence is our size. So, we're the smallest state, we're the capital city of a smallest state that kind of operates as a city state. But because of the economy of size, we are able to, I think, do more of that work collaboratively and have those linkages that maybe some DMOs that have a bigger sort of geographical presence might be able to do.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, my opinion on this has sort of evolved. I came into the industry as a CMO and for a destination where we're very heavy. Our DMO was very heavy on the promotional side, and we really weren't involved in product development at all. And I think I've seen in 4 years a desire for us to get more involved in, at least to your point, convening and not necessarily leading that, but being at the table. And I think I always go back to what Brad Dean has said throughout his career. And he said on this show too, which is if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And if you can't get on the table, then you need to create a new table, set a new table for every stakeholder to be at. And so I think a lot of times that's the role we're trying to take is we're looking to see who's on first base for any initiative and who's not there that should be there involved and making sure a table is set if it's not set. And we don't need to take credit. We don't need to have the glory. We just want to make sure the good work is being done.
Yes, but I also think it does help with advocacy, right? Because now you're part of that community conversation, is what I call it. And so then when there are challenges and threats to your funding, you have this army of people that will advocate on your behalf because of the work that you're doing. And that kind of even bleeds into advocacy for some things that you would never think. Like we do a lot of work around transportation. And working with like-minded stakeholders on transportation, because that's so key to what we do. And not everyone makes that connection with DMOs. So we even kind of get into that arena. We're working with our public transit to build up that airport bus route, and what can we do to market it, and how do we, because there's only like one stop between the airport and downtown Providence. So we even get into that kind of stuff where you're looking at agencies that might be a little off your mission. Another one, we do work with the people who work with the unhoused, and we'll frequently work with them to try to get pockets that really need a little bit of a cleanup. We'll work with them to get those people like placed. So we really kind of we find we're a steward of the destination.
And that's a trend we've been seeing for a few years. I know there's destination marketing organizations that actually rebranded as DSOs, right? And destination stewardship organizations. I think for me, the way I look at it is what's our purpose, right? And we always go back to really two things. We are really the leader and the point in charge of the visitor economy and the visitor experience. But more importantly is we're a stakeholder in the quality of life. We're not certainly not alone in that, and it's not, maybe not our sole mission, but the quality of life of the residents, right? That's certainly a mandate. We exist to improve the quality of life of our community, our businesses, our residents through the tourism economy. And so, of course, if we have systemic problems like unhoused folks, if we have public safety challenges, if we have a worker shortage, like there's a myriad. If we have limited transportation that's causing traffic congestion, then we have to have a seat at that table because it's imperative for both driving the tourism economy and the experience the visitors have and the quality of life of residents. All of those impact both sides of that equation. So if it's having an impact positively or negative on either of those, we have to be at the table. That's the way we look at it.
And I think you have to, oh, I'm sorry.
Oh no, go ahead, Kristen. Finish your
I think you
thought
have to
there.
have board investment, right? So as we're working, that we have definitely shifted the way in which we work. And as we're working, we do check in with the board. And you know, yes, it's heads and beds, but if you don't have a vibrant, thriving downtown and arts and cultural scene, ways to get here, then that point is moot. And so I think that that's the key, is making sure that your board has a clear understanding of what you're trying to do and why you're trying to do it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I agree.
I think for me, I would just kind of zoom out a little bit and remember on issues like this, especially as we're talking about the CEO's role, in most cases, I'm coming outside looking in. I've never been in a DMO and worked in a DMO. And so a lot of times I find myself asking questions that, like I said, are outside looking in. So when I look at this specific topic of should a CEO be involved in product development, and if so, what should that role be? I look at destination marketing organizations and I say, okay, if your job is to market the destination and bring in more visitation, there's only a couple of levers that you have to pull, right? So if you're going to put out an aspirational campaign of what to inspire people to visit, of what types of experiences they can have here, you're somewhat limited by the types of experiences they can have here, right? And so if you've reached kind of the peak of what you're able to promote, the lever that you have to pull is to improve the product. And I've seen a lot of executive directors or CEOs, when they're dealing with this problem, they basically say, look, I'm doing the best I can with the assets that I have, but I can't go build a new park. And my thought process as I look at that is, well, you may not be able to go build a new park or attraction or whatever it is, but if you stay out of that conversation, you're going to be judged by the promotion of the existing assets that you're doing forever. And so if you have a product problem and you're supposed to market it and you don't get involved in improving the product, I think you're leaving a ton of opportunity and responsibility on the table if you don't get involved. And so many people talk about authenticity, right? And that's why you've got over 40 destinations across the country using the word real or some variation thereof in their marketing, is because we are trying to be as authentic as possible. And the only way to improve the quality of your marketing message is to bring the product along with it, or it becomes completely inauthentic and you're promoting something that doesn't even exist in the destination.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you a great example of kind of what you're talking about. So, in Rhode Island, in Providence, our signature event is Waterfire, which is a series of 100 braziers that kind of live in the water. We do it, May through November. You can't find it with regularity anywhere in the world. And we had a problem, like most arts organizations, Waterfire was going under. We're in a really, really tough time for any arts organization right now. There's no more ARPA funding, there's cuts at the federal level, and there's a decline in corporate giving. So I spend at this point about 15 or 20 hours a week helping Waterfire. And my board is on board with that because I can show through the data how much they increase not only occupancy, but rate. Particularly in the shoulder seasons. But you get a lot of pushback because, oh, well, you're doing this for Waterfire. Why aren't you doing it for any of the other arts organizations? And you try your best, but Waterfire is a perfect example of where the mission of the organization meets that advocacy. It's not a nice thing to have. It's a powerful revenue generator. And so my board is 100% on board with me helping to turn Waterfire around.
That makes sense. And that's why it's critical that it starts with selecting, having a board that is strong, that has a comprehensive view of the community, not just their own business, right? That they're actually there and they're willing to listen to data and the education that you provide to give them the why. Like, why am I spending so much time as a percentage with this one organization versus others that I could be spending it. So that having a strong board, but more importantly, educating that board, I think is critical. And at the end of the day, it comes back to that why. Like, if we're really trying to make our community thrive, then what are the opportunities to do that for our specific unique community? Because again, they're all very different. And I think one of the things we're beginning to realize is there's a shift in our brand and what we focus on when we talk about our brand. And especially now, because of the way consumers are sort of shopping and making decisions and ultimately consuming product, I think there's still a lot of DMOs out there that think their brand is their Visit Myrtle Beach and their logo, right? Whatever the organization's name is the brand. I think there's some that have shifted to say, well, it's actually not my organization. It's the community name, the umbrella. So in our case, it would be the Myrtle Beach area. But I think the more sophisticated DMOs, and we're just making this shift, is they're realizing that their brand is an amalgamation, a collection of all of the individual experiences that and products that their community offers the consumer. And so if we're charged with managing, overseeing the brand perception of our destination, it's imperative that we have our arms around and our finger on the scale for the product development, because that is our brand ultimately. And to Adam's point, I think if we're promoting a bad product, ultimately everyone's going to lose in the long term.
Yeah. I want to
Agreed.
ask Kristen a question, if that's okay. So, Kristen, you mentioned that in 2020 you were a relatively new CEO, but when you talk about the integration that you have with so many different agencies and departments within your destination, you're talking about transportation, you're talking about the unhoused. I mean, what led you as a CEO to say, yes, I'm going to build relationships with all these different, I mean, you're working 20 hours a week to save an asset that's critical to tourism, right? So how did you as a CEO make this decision that you're going to focus on getting involved in product and making sure, because you've got a great marketing team, making sure that your marketing team has incredible assets to promote?
So necessity. We like all of you, we experienced the pandemic really, really brutal times. And so what I leaned on is what am I good at? How do I use the skills? And like you, I came out of marketing. So I started a PR campaign in, for lack of a better word, to make sure that we were on the top of everyone's list of things they needed to protect and support. And so that's kind of that's how I sort of made a splash. And then as we were recovering, we were instrumental in helping. I remember because it's again size, you can pretty get to the governor pretty easily. And the minute we were out of the pandemic, we hosted an outdoor socially distanced roundtable, and he sat next to me with his notebook, and we let everyone go around and tell him just the problems that we were facing. And so I think that communication skill was invaluable in introducing not only myself but my organization to that conversation. And we had a good background, like people knew who Go Providence was, but because of that, we were getting into a different role. And then the same thing with product development. Coming out of the pandemic, we were able to access a lot of grant funding that other people weren't. And so we were able to have a financially stable organization. So we didn't rely on that grant funding. We thought, all right, well, what can we do to make the city better and give us stuff to market? And so it just sort of snowballed from there. But I think, Adam, you hit on it, right? I have a great VP of marketing. I have a great senior VP. Your house has to be in order, both structurally and financially, for you to be able to go and do these other things. And I'm very lucky that I have people that can do those things for me while I go out and really kind of become a destination manager.
Do you let me ask you this, because I think this is a challenge that some DMOs, at least that I've spoken to, are facing, is as they've shifted, especially as leadership shifted its focus more towards product development and sort of internal activities. There could be a criticism that we're taking our eye off the ball, right? Because there's still an element that sees our role as a DMO as tourism promotion, and that being the sole purpose for our existence. That mindset still exists. And I think increasingly post-COVID, we're being encouraged. A lot of DMOs have this downward pressure to get further down the funnel to actually not just drive awareness for the destination, but actually drive performance to individual businesses. Let's say hotels, right? So hotels try to hold us accountable for their individual performance versus looking at it on a macro level at the destination wide. So what do you say to those, or do you even get those critics? But if you do, what do you say to those folks that are maybe saying, hey, I need more heads in beds, and you're over here working with this arts group? What's your response to that?
I think that's tremendously short-sighted to think that it's still all about heads and beds. Yes, that pays the bills, but they're not coming if you don't have a robust product. And I think where the hotels understand that more than anything really is meetings and conventions and sports, right? We have destinations around us that have an equal or even sometimes more affordable package when it comes to M&C. Where we excel is we have more stuff to do. And so sometimes that is the point. Because if you're going to a conference and if there's nothing for your attendees to do, that's a big problem. But if you're coming to a conference and there are things to do, that's better. And I'll give you a great example back to WaterFire. WaterFire was desperate for money. So we, through our TID, we started funding them at a significant level, but we tied it back to meetings and conventions. So we said, listen, we're going to give you this money, but then we want the ability to schedule WaterFires when we need them. So in other words, if I have a group coming in, and they're like, they meet the parameters and they're not sure what they want to do, we'll throw in a partial WaterFire, then they sign. Or if I go back to my hoteliers and say, What weekend in the summer is dead? They tell me, and then I schedule a water fire. So that's a win-win, right? It's helping the organization, but it's also affecting the hotel's bottom line. And it allowed me to get a significant amount of funding to save water fire without hurting the destination.
I think based on that dilemma that you were faced with, right, is do I help water fire or do I just kind of let nature take its course, for lack of a better description, you're going to be criticized either way, right? But I can tell you that being criticized for inaction can have a lot more public, I would say, like, negative perception than being criticized for taking action and doing what you can to save an asset like that. And when you think about the hotel, if water fire is a major driver for the destination, if you allow that asset to no longer exist, well, now that whole hotel is going to be criticizing you a whole lot more for allowing it to go away. And so I think if you ever are faced with the choice of being criticized for action or inaction, you have to take the action route.
Yeah, we
For
tie
sure.
everything back to room nights if we can. We start a culinary festival this year, and it we tied it back. The hotels were okay with using money to fund that. We got some other sponsorships, but it was about okay, we've spent 20 years building our culinary brand. This is the next evolution. We need to do this. It's a dead weekend. We need to do this. We ex are going to build this product into something that will bring people in on that weekend. We need to do this. So as long as you can make a compelling argument that your hoteliers on your board and otherwise understand, you can sell fairly easily, I think.
Yeah, it just takes time to build that consensus, but you've got to also position yourself as a trusted source for solutions like that, right? That doesn't happen overnight. So, do you have any advice, for the DMOs that are maybe in a smaller destination that have historically just focused on the promotional side of the engine? What advice would you give people who are just starting this journey towards the more economic development side and the product development side?
Well, I think like you, because I come out of a marketing background, I start with communication. If you're not regularly communicating with your mayor, that's a problem. I tend to write op-eds. So you want to position yourself as being trusted. And so then when you go to kind of do these bold things, there's a level of trust there. I would say, like-minded organizations are key. We work with our business improvement district downtown, our charitable foundation downtown. We work with arts organizations. We work with our both state and city commerce departments. So the more you can be collaborative and the more you can communicate your experience, I think that's the way to do it. And it has other consequences. When we got our TID in Providence, it was fairly easy. Because they already knew us and they knew what we did, and they were supportive of the ways in which we wanted to grow the organization and the destination.
Yeah. The op-eds is an interesting one. I don't hear many DMO CEOs being that proactive with the media. Is that something you've done for a while, and how has that gone? Have you gotten any pushback?
Yeah, well, I get pushback. Not from other DMOs, but I sometimes get pushback for the level of attention that I personally and the DMO get. But my thing on that is, well, I'm doing my job. I will I my background to go even deeper is PR. So I've been working with media since I started. And I think they can be a useful tool. Does that sometimes come back to bite you? Yes. But I think that if you are explaining the work that you're doing in a compelling way, it can be really effective. It ha has helped a lot with politicians. They see you out there. I think that's helpful. I also, this is kind of controversial, I think my gender is helpful. I think I can get away with some stuff that maybe a man can't because of the way in which I do it. Like I want a sports facility. So I frequently will, in the media and to local officials, I'll just say, "Hey, when are you building me my giant wooden box?" But if you keep saying that enough, someone's going to be like, yeah, we got to build that giant wooden box.
It becomes inevitable,
Yeah, it's inevitable, inevitable. So I think that kind of stuff helps.
How does that, obviously we've seen a change in terms of media consumption, but also shaping the narrative in a community, and social media has taken on a much larger role today than maybe it was even 5 years ago. And so how do you engage on social as well as with mainstream media?
We do. I was a big fan of Twitter until a few years ago and did a lot of talking to elected officials and journalists during the pandemic through my Twitter account.
Oh,
And it
wow.
was
Interesting.
really effective. Now, personally, I do a lot on Instagram and LinkedIn, but my team has done incredible work on LinkedIn, really building up. They have a LinkedIn newsletter, all of that. And people really buy into that. We also will occasionally take a stand via social media. Our governor is looking to cut bus service, and we took a stand against it. We consulted with our hospitality association first. They said we're coming out against it. They came out, we backed them out, and then I took those two statements and sent it to another group and said, "Look, we did this. Are you going to join us?" And they did, and then another one did. And so we were really part of this like grassroots movement to let the governor know that this was a decision that will affect our not only our visitors but our workers. And it was important enough for us to engage in that political discourse, which we don't always do.
Now, do you in that political arena, do you stay sort of focused on issues versus candidates? Do you ever get
Yes.
to the point where you're supporting an individual candidate?
No, we never we leave that to the Hospitality Association. But we do engage in issues, but it also, again, it's a sense of place, right? Rhode Island is a very blue state. Providence is a very blue city. We do not have any Republicans that are in state office. So it's a very different political landscape in which to work than I think most people have it. So I think it's a little bit easier for us to talk about some of the things that we prioritize.
Well, and when you're getting involved in political issues, it all comes from the mission of protecting the visitor economy and making sure that that visitor economy benefits the residents. And so, as long as that mission stays in line, I think getting involved in issues makes a lot of sense through that lens. I'm really interested, Kristen. Stuart and I have had several CEOs on the show who have come through the marketing track. And I think historically, in the destination marketing space, sales has been the vehicle by which most people become a CEO. The people that we've had on that have come through the marketing track from especially from a communications, messaging, and even vision perspective, the ability they have to holistically look at the destination and what needs to be done. And I may be biased coming through the lens of marketing, right? But I just think they've been able to accomplish so much. How realistic is it for other people coming up through marketing to see CEO as the end point of that track?
I think it's very realistic. I think that communication stuff is what got me through the pandemic. Without it, I think we would have had a much tougher road to kind of go through. So I think marketing also encourages big picture thinking. When you're the head of marketing, you're looking at a multi-channel marketing platform. And so you're able to see, because of the training you've had, all of how all of the parts fit together. And I think that the work that we do as marketers is more qualitative than quantitative in a lot of ways, not all, but in a lot of ways. And I think that kind of creative big picture thinking lends itself really well to running an organization.
And I would also add to that too. I think, part of the responsibility of the marketing function of a DMO is developing the perception, right? The reputation management, but also the brand storytelling. Like who is this destination? And so that's a value that propagates beyond the marketing team. I mean, obviously the sales groups and meetings team, sports, all of that benefits dramatically from a positive brand perception, economic development benefits dramatically from a brand perception. even elected officials are benefiting from that because the perceived quality of the product and the experience and the quality of life of the residents is going to, in a lot of ways, reflect on who they're voting in and out. So I think the marketers, and again, I'm right. I'm certainly biased coming from marketing, but I feel like it's the function that is most critical and really the one that everything else follows from. It's sort of the leading piece of a DMO. And that's why I still like it as being called destination marketing organizations, even though I understand the limitations at that word. But if you sort of go back to the first principles of marketing and the four P's, product is part of marketing, right? It was one of the P's. And so I think you even said this at Esto, Adam, and this is what you got a round of applause for, is we need to stop sort of worrying about our identity in terms of what we name ourselves and focus more on the function of what we do and why we do it. And I think we're going to be okay. Yeah, I think marketing is a natural evolution, but we've also got leaders that have come through other. You look at someone like Brad Dean, who I always already mentioned. He was certainly not a marketer. He came from the finance side, right? He was a CFO before he was a CEO. So I think good leaders share one thing in common, which is one, they don't need to take credit, right? They're not looking for the ego to drive them. They're really looking to solve the problems for the community. But two, like Kristen said, they're looking at things from a holistic perspective. They're able to join the dots. I do think marketers are more naturally able to do that, but I think, folks can certainly come from other places too.
I think we're risk takers, right? Like marketers will be like, let's try it. And I think that's okay. I think that's a strength.
For sure. And more recently so, right? It's been more rewarded in recent times. We've had to be risk takers because we've had to evolve through COVID and through sort of the existential threat of funding and things like that. So I think you're right that trend that Adam's saying he's seeing recently may be a result of where we are. We have to take calculated risks and be willing to challenge the status quo. And you're right, Kristen. Marketers are certainly more have a higher propensity to do that than a salesperson or a finance person or operations person. So it makes a lot of sense. I'm team
That's why it's
marketing.
impressive. It's impressive what Brad Dean's doing coming from a finance perspective, because those are not risk takers in most
Yeah.
cases.
But he puts people around him that are, right? If you look at who he had here in Myrtle Beach, he had Scott Schultz. In Puerto Rico, he had Leah, so there's he's going to surround himself with those folks that can take the risks.
But that's a really good point, right? Is you have to have a balance. So we laugh about it. My senior VP, Tom Reel, is very, he's never met a spreadsheet he didn't love. And so he's very like detail oriented. He's very data driven. He's very about the process. And so, but that's part of it, right? Is when you have a leadership team, you have to have people that play opposite your strengths. And that's what Tom does, especially Tom does for me.
And sometimes that means not taking the credit, right? Like I'm learning more as I sort of develop in my career and look to for mentors and look for people that I think I admire. They're all, they're very confident like yourself. They're very willing to take the spotlight, but they're not doing it for their ego, right? That it's sort of like I'm willing to do this, but that's not my main purpose or goal. So I think a lot of these leaders, and I think this is what DMOs need to do in general, is we can contribute more to our destination if we don't worry about taking the credit. Like if we provide the value, and maybe sometimes we're just staying in the background and we're helping to maneuver the right pieces into place, but then we give all the credit to the elected officials who do have a big ego quite often, or we give all the credit to the folks who that's their primary function. We can get way more done. And so I think that's to me the model that seems to be really successful right now, and certainly one that M Visit Myrtle Beach is trying to emulate.
We did something very small that has ended up being a very good thing. When I took over as CEO, I wanted to be able to communicate to the staff and the board because I believe information keeps everyone happy. So I started this little three things, it's called. And every Friday, I put three things that we did, somebody did in the office, or three things that were in the media, or whatever. And I've been doing it for 6 years, and I think I have 75 people now on it because people heard about it and they were like, I want to know. So now I've got all my hoteliers, I've got my board, my staff, I have some elected officials, I have the airport, all of these people. And it has become a great way for them to be invested in what we're doing, but it's also helped the staff, right? So I give credit, to your point, to everyone who's doing these wonderful things, and they're excited to be in it. And so they're excited to see their talents and projects recognized. And it was just this really easy way to keep my board plugged in, and it's mushroomed into this other thing that's become a really great communication vehicle for key stakeholders.
Yeah, we do something similar. Like we probably err on the oversharing at times, but I love the fact you're keeping it to three things because it's always going to be valuable and relevant, and people are going to want to keep consuming it, right? And
And they'll read the whole
because
thing.
right, they're not going to kind of get fatigued like a lot of folks do. But we're the same in that we started sharing something to our marketing committee initially, which is our CVB board. And then we realized, well, the staff needs to see this too, so that our full team knows the full breadth of everything we're doing. Because we got, between our chamber and CBB side, we got about 50 employees. So keeping everyone aligned, knowing what's going on is a challenge. So we added them. And then we started hearing from the city, well, we'd like to know what's more to go. So we started sharing with city staff and then elected officials. So we've done the same thing. And it's really interesting because you don't know if everyone's reading it. And certainly there's folks that aren't. But I've lost count of the number of times that as an important stakeholder has come to me and said, made a comment about what they've learned from that initiative. And we're sharing the good, the bad, and the ugly. We're sharing a little bit of, what the media's saying about us. If we have like an incident in that community, we'll talk about what the coverage has been. We'll share data and performance data and things like that.
Well,
But I,
it keeps your agency partners updated too, right?
oh
Like
yeah,
we get
we
that
share you guys.
email.
Yeah, that's right.
We're one of nine agencies that you work with, and we can see more of the big picture by receiving that email as well.
Yeah, for sure. So I agree with you, Kristen. I think the more you can share information, I think it goes back to that old saying, if you engage, people will defend. If you just share, they're going to criticize. And so bringing them to the table too and giving them information, but asking, giving them opportunities to contribute back and share how they can get involved, I think that's a critical piece for us. That's neat. Well, we're
Well,
getting short on time here, Kristen. I love this topic. Are there any, you already sort of talked about when getting started, it starts with, engaging and sharing and the communication side. But, once assuming people have gotten that going, are there any big lessons you've learned over the last couple of years or any sort of must-dos if you're going to be successful with this kind of initiative?
I think you have to really, Oma, I call it our dog and pony, right? Once they kind of know who you are, you have to tell them what you do. And so I think you have to get out to different groups and make sure they understand the ROI and the work that you're doing. And sometimes those groups might not even make sense at the time, but they end up being like the Rotary. Like you're like, oh, whatever with the Rotary, but you never know who's in there. So we try to do as much as we can when we're asked for speaking engagements, things like that, just to get our name out there. I think is really important, and to have, I'm sure everyone does this as well, like to have those ROI, that data at the ready. We have little cards that we give out kind of wherever we go because people love those facts and numbers and they're easily digestible. So I think that's it. It's
Hold on,
about,
tell me about those cards, 'cause I like
yeah,
that.
that's really
That
interesting.
what
Oh, I thought
metrics are on
everybody
that
did
card?
it.
It's a postcard size and it says how many meetings we booked, what the economic impact is, and then breaks down all of that. It does the same thing for sports. It has some marketing data, web stat data. We're actually right now looking at drilling even deeper and looking at credit card data and putting
Interesting.
that on there as well, because
Wow.
it's more important to have that really, really specific data. So that's like the next evolution is going to be, what I told my team at the end of the day, what I want to say is, here's how much more in taxes you would pay
Yeah.
if we didn't exist. And we can do that on the state level. We haven't been, I have two cities, Providence and Warwick. So we haven't done it on the municipal level yet. And that's something I'm really interested in doing, as we fight to keep our funding. it's always important to be proactive.
That's great. Would you mind sharing that with us so we could maybe put a link to what that looks like to our
Sure.
audience?
I'll have to see if the new, because our fiscal just ended. I don't know if the new one's out
Yeah.
yet, but if it is, I will.
Okay. That'd be great. Yeah, that's a really cool
Yeah.
idea. I mean, we definitely are putting more focus on that, you know, and we're seeing a trend in in topics at the conferences on marketing the marketing, right? Telling people what we're doing and why we're doing it and how we're performing. But I'm also seeing a trend. I heard this a couple of times at Esto is people are encouraging DMOs to have someone on staff, either a new position or someone that's already there, whose focus is on that internal advocacy to the local stakeholders, to go to the Rotary clubs, to go and talk to all the different groups in the area about what we do, why we do it, why we're valuable. Because you're
One
right,
of
it
the
doesn't, you don't always know. Like a nonprofit board may have a spouse of an elected official or whatever, you know. So if we're going to prove our value constantly, we've got to proliferate the entire community, and that's a great way to do it.
When you talk about marketing, one of the things we do is market the organization to
Right.
our local stakeholders as a business. It
Yeah.
is a business. We are in, you invest us in us, we bring in money. And so we do a lot of like I'll be the local business journal has a panel every year, and they invite me every year because they see us as one of the largest businesses in Rhode Island, and we are.
Yeah.
And so that's how I always try to frame it, is we're not a nice to have, we're an essential.
Yeah. And we're a business with every single community member being a shareholder in our business, right? So they have a vested interest in what we do for them, how we provide value to them. This is great.
Yeah.
Adam, any final takeaways from you from this conversation? I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh no, one of the things that I am really excited about, Kristen, with what you've talked about, and you and I are going to record an episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast soon too. This idea of the CEO being more involved in the communication strategy is something that I really think is an aspirational opportunity for everybody that's leading a destination marketing organization. Is you should be the face. You should be out there, not for your own ego, but specifically because it's going to benefit the organization, and they actually can associate a person with that. And your op-eds that you're doing, the presentations, handing out those cards at every event that you go to, you are a consistent beacon of communication for your destination. And I actually think that communication, like you said, is going to be the currency by which you can change a perception in a destination. I love that.
Yeah, really great. Kristen, thank you so much. We're going to
Thank
give you an
you.
opportunity to share your contact info if anyone wants to reach out to you. So what would be the best way to do that?
It's very easy. It's K Adamo, Adamo, at goprovidence.com.
Thank you. Adam, if they want to reach you, where can they do that?
You can find me on Tourism IQ, LinkedIn, or adam@thebrandrevolt.com.
Great. You can find me on LinkedIn as Stuart Butler or stuart.butler@visitmontebeach.com. Kristen, I really enjoyed today. I think you've given me a lot to think about. I'm going to go straight to my communication manager and talk to her about, I might give her a heart attack, but I'm going to say, hey, what do you think about us doing op-eds in the local newspaper and see what kind of reaction I get? Because I think that's great. And then the takeaway of the little leave behind cards, business cards, that's brilliant. I hadn't heard that. So maybe that's because I'm newer to the industry, but that I think a lot of DMOs should be doing that. So
Well, thanks. I listen,
appreciate you.
I'll sit around and talk destination marketing with two other destination marketers any day.
Well, you're welcome back anytime. This has been great. If you have another hot topic you want to bring, and anyone listening today or anyone that saw us for the first time at Esto, we probably got a handful of new listeners right now. We'd love to have you on the show. Please do like, subscribe, tell a friend. You know, if you like and subscribe, that's how other people find us. That's how we'll find new amazing guests like Kristen was today. And we just appreciate the destination growing. And Adam, we had a vote at
We did.
Esto about destination, and the people spoke, but we may overrule the people. Is that
There's
what
a
I'm hearing?
problem.
Is
Yeah, there's
there?
a problem. And
You
that's the fact
want to
that
set it up?
destination, if you spell it DESTINATION, looks like
Yeah.
destination, which is kind of fun. It's a great play on words.
But
I
I
think
think
that's
if you
why
put the N
everybody
in there,
voted it.
right, you can differentiate between the two. They put the emphasis on the
Yes,
N. Yeah.
totally. But
Yeah.
that's why I think people liked it. I think the problem is when you shorten it to Desti, I don't think that DSTI is the same. And so I think that it still needs to be DESTI and a DESTIE for it to make sense as a standalone. And so I don't know. I think we may need to do a little bit more audience polling with full context.
Yeah, well, and we had an interesting conversation with Matt Steiker from Madden after the awards at ESTO, right, where he pointed out, and this has got me changing because I was full team DESTINA, until he said, the focus is on the individual, is on the people, and those are DESTIs. And if our focus is on the individuals, then it has to be DESTI with an IE. So I'm like, yeah. So the jury is still out. If you want to leave us a review or shoot us a note and weigh in, I mean, if this is your community, do you want to have an E in the destination or do you not? I agree with you, Adam. I think Desti needs an E, but does destination? I don't know. I'm
I
still on
got
the
to tell you,
fence.
being right does get exhausting, though. And so if we need to keep it the other way around, that's fine too.
Yeah, Kristen, we said that CEOs need to not have an ego, but we didn't say anything about the vendors in our industry. So, on that note, everyone, thank you for listening. This has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
That's a lot of Adam for one day.
It's perfectly fine. Are you kidding? I might
Thank
put
you,
my baseball
Kristen.
hat on just to as an homage.
You know what? Somebody who appreciates me, finally.
I like it.
All right.